From the History Yogi podcast, this is Dave. Lee Kin Man, better known as Mr. Brown, is known as the Block Father of Singapore and has become a cultural icon with his skits and witty takes on life here. Today, we speak to Mr. Brown on his beginnings, reactions to his memorable Bak Chor Mee podcast and newspaper column, his creative process, and his endurance as an influencer for more than two decades. Listen also to a special message from Kim Huat. Okay, thanks so much for joining me today. Could you share with us how you started blogging and how the Mr. Brown stage name came about?
I started doing this blogging thing in 1997. It was just a series of writings. At that time, there was no social media. There was no podcasting. There was none of that Facebook stuff. So, in fact, websites were still very new. So, I started writing in forums, SOC, SOC Singapore Culture. People who are very old will remember that. And it's something like Reddit, you know. But that's the very early groups, user groups, yeah. And I started sharing my jokes on that platform. And then someone took one of the things I wrote as Singapore National Education, because at that time they just launched Singapore National Education for schools. And then I wrote this sort of 25-point rant, and someone kind of shared that with a new title, The Real Singapore National Education. So I thought that was pretty funny. So I wrote part two, and that became 106 part. Yeah, I reached part 106 actually, and eventually, and it was known as the SNE series. So how the blogging happened was I set up a website because people started to ask me about, you know, can I have, I've read one of your Singapore National Education posts, SNE, someone forwarded to me by email. Can I have part one to part 10? You know, I read part 11. I got tired of sending these out. So I said, okay, tell you what, I'll put everything on this website. Mm-hmm. And originally it was a Singtel, SingPost. I don't know what is it Singtel? They were Singnet 2 megabyte free website hosting service that you get as part of your internet package. And I put it up there, and then I started adding to it. And then eventually I moved it to MrBrown.com because I ran out of space on that one, and started to write other things as well. So the blog was born. Mr. Brown, the name came out of a nickname I had when I was a teenager. Wasn't a stage name I created later in life. It was actually a name that even my BFFs call me to this day, because I was saying how now Brown Cow a lot every day when we met up, and they started calling me Mr. Brown Cow. And then that got shortened to Brown. Thank goodness not Cow, Mr. Cow. That wouldn't be very cool. And my girlfriend then and my wife now was called Mrs. Brown even before she married me. So that name stuck. So when I set up the website web page, I think back then even wasn't even called a site, I registered MrBrown.com, and then that was the beginning of the site. I think it was 97, thereabouts. And then I started uploading things, and everything was just pure HTML. I had to do it by hand. It was very painful. But I was sharing things about my life as well. And then someone submitted my website for some blogging awards, you know, regional blogging awards. And I was like, huh? What's a blog? And then one of the guys the person who submitted it told me, yours is a blog. I said, oh, is it? Okay. if it's a blog, you think it's a blog, web blog, right, at that time, then so be it. It is what it is. So I think I won for some category. I put it up, you know, as a badge, quite fun. And that led to the blogging, because I was already doing it before there was a name for it. And then later on, I started podcasting in 2005. That was basically a series of talk-talk sessions between myself and Mr. Miyagi, also known as Mr. Benjamin Lee. And we started, you know, recording our conversations, which were generally quite funny to us, like, anyway. Other people kind of found it funny too. And that evolved into a Mr. Brown show that had sketch comedy in it. And that ran for quite a number of years. And it's still running today in a different format. So the podcast, the Mr. Brown Show, has been around since 2005. The blog is still up, although I'm more active on my other platforms, social media, like Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat, and TikTok most recently. Yeah. So there's a brief history of Mr. Brown and MrBrown.com.
So when we discuss the Mr. Brown Show, I mean, your podcast episode on Bak Chor Mee satirizing the James Gomez incident during GE 2006 got mentioned in PM Lee's National Day rally that year.
And it's not just all fun and games. I give you an example. You put out a funny podcast. You talk about Bak Chor Mee. I will say, Mee Siam Mai Ham. Then we compete. Then what will I do? I will hire Jack Neo to be my National Day rally advisor. It will be a fun time. We will enjoy thoroughly, go home, totally entertained. But is this the way to deal with serious issues?
And the PM made a joke about Mee Siam Mai Ham, which then sparked one of the earliest political memes of the new millennium. Were you surprised at the level of attention your podcast was getting at the time?
A bit. It has always been fairly popular before this. This is bearing in mind there was no social media back then. So people were forwarding things via email and other means. The show was fairly popular because of the sketch comedy, but that one blew up. The Bak Chor Mee one blew up in a big way. And then following that, when PM made the... So it was a flub, really, about Mee Siam, right? And that became another podcast that took a life of its own. And yeah, it was kind of surprising, but at the same time, it already had an audience. I think PM just gave it a bit of a push. It's fun though to see that blow up. Yeah, that Mee Siam Mai Ham song that was based off Fergie, right? The Guy P song that ended up as a ringtone for a lot of people. Mai Ham, Mai Ham. Yeah, so much fun.
Now, of course, in 2006, you also made headlines when your satirical column in the Today newspaper was titled "Singaporeans Are Fed Up with Progress." So it attracted government criticism, and then your column was later suspended. In hindsight, do you think the authorities simply didn't understand satire?
I don't think they didn't understand satire. They just didn't like it very much, right? I mean, also the column wasn't labeled properly. It used to be called humor. And then somewhere along the way, I think they changed the title to... what is it called? Something about opinions or something, right? So it no longer said humor. It was something like, it was something fancy. And I think it, then you don't, it's not, it, then if you, labeling is important because if you look at the heading and then think, okay, this is a serious opinion piece, it's a problem, you know? Also, I think whether or not they understood it was satire or not, they didn't like it because I took that particular piece, wasn't even my funniest piece, I felt. I had written way funnier pieces before this and even more pointed ones, but that particular one seemed to draw their ire more than the rest. Also because it took pot shots at just about every ministry under the sun. But yeah, I mean, that was unfortunate. And it was a good gig too. I enjoyed writing the column, but it got suspended. And of course, to this day, they have never acknowledged that they had a hand in it. Of course, they didn't ask for the column to be suspended officially. They just wrote a very strongly worded letter to the press about it. The kind of letter back then, in those days, you reserve for people who are political dissidents or political opposition members that you want to take down. Very strong language, basically. You'd be foolish to take it not seriously if you were that person they are writing about or the publication that published your stuff, right? It's strongly worded. And I don't really blame the paper for doing what they had to do, the editors. But Yeah, but it was a very different climate back then, right? There was no social media seriously back then. And that was 2006. Six, yeah. The column ran from 2003 to 2006. So just the beginnings of social media, right? And it is a worry, like, because suddenly you have this guy who stuck his neck out and said some outlandish things to them anyway. I guess they had to respond in some way, and they responded in the way they usually did. Is it slightly different now, I guess, right? But back then it was a different climate. Yeah, it was not enjoyable I don't want to use the word targeted, to be noticed and, you know, spoken about. That's not the kind of attention you want. But there's always that risk, when you are writing humor, right? And politics is such a large part of our lives in Singapore because of just that one giant party. Inevitably, they become the butt of many jokes, right? Yeah, you can't really escape their influence. So, yeah, that was what happened back then. And of course, I was very touched by the support given to me by people at the press room. I was told some of them, many of them, showed up wearing brown in protest at the decision to suspend the column. So I'm very moved. Yeah, not something you hear about. It wasn't written about, but they did. Yeah, I have it on good authority that day that they did come to the office wearing brown that day. Also, there was that incident where they had people gather at the City Hall MRT station for the flash mob silent protest wearing brown as well. By that time, I realized that the thing had gotten bigger than myself. Yeah, that was pretty frightening too, by the way. Very moved by the support, but also a little bit scared at the possible repercussions, right? I told the organizer of the gathering, who contacted me and said he was going to do it. And I was like, be careful. Don't get yourself in trouble. Not on my account, right? Yeah. But yeah, that was fun times.
The whole incident make you reconsider your approach on the kind of content that you produce?
No. I'm still me. I mean, I've never seen myself as anything revolutionary. I mean, I'm not trying to overthrow anything, right? I am just a regular person with a big mouth and who enjoys telling jokes, right? And sometimes the jokes may push the wrong buttons. But no, I've never deliberately changed my approach on the back of that. That said, I'm older now. I'm also more mellow. So, and I see things slightly differently from 20-something, 30-year-old me. So some people have perceived that, oh, you've become you're not as critical as you used to be, as somebody, if more than one person has mentioned this. I don't think that's the case. I just feel that as you get older, you're not so angry all the time. You also see things from more than one angle now. And you also have a slightly different way of expressing your views, right? So older, wiser, I don't think you have compromised. You've just changed with your age and your worldview as you get more information. And, you know, I would like to think you've gotten wiser a little bit. So I don't think I'm the same person that did or wrote what I did back in 2006 in some areas, but I didn't consciously change it on the back of that response. It's just a process of growth, I think. And also your interests change, right? Yeah. You can't remain that same person all the time, I think. You have to evolve. But my sense of humor is still there. Some of the stuff I can say in private, sometimes I don't say it out loud. It's also very different now, I think. Yeah. Twitter, for example, is a lot more woke. So one has to be mindful of the responses. Sometimes you don't, it's not, you got to pick your fight. Some things are not worth getting drawn into, you know, just for one joke, I feel. I'm not that foolhardy anymore, as I said before. What a waste of energy. I'd rather find other things to make fun of, right? But some things I've stuck my neck out for quite a bit. I think, for example, vaccinations, I get a lot of heat for that one. You'd be surprised how angry people are about vaccinations when I tell people they should get vaccinated. So pick your battles. Some things I feel are important enough to warrant drawing all the flak.
I mean, you've not shied away entirely from political jokes either, because you later created this character called Minister Midas, who had many things to say.
Yeah, Midas is still there. He comes out a lot during elections, because that's when, you know, the silliest things get said. But recently he's busy with, you know, managing mask distribution. So he's been given a very important task, so he's not free to come out. But Midas is fun. He's still around. He's not retired. But there has to be he has to have something to say, right? And the last 2 years, 18 months, we've been so preoccupied trying to get over this pandemic, get around. And I have to say that, yes, we've dropped the ball once or twice, but I think we've gotten ahead of this virus in a way that very few people would say we did a bad job. Our government has done a bad job, right? I think this is where they have proven themselves diligent and, you know, hardworking. I mean, yes, there have been some mistakes on hindsight, but hindsight is easy, right? 2020. But by and large, I think there's very little to complain about. And I don't want to stir shit for the sake of a joke, because I think it's important for us to rally and get this, you know, get over this pandemic in a way that is productive and so that livelihoods can be lives and livelihoods can resume, can be saved. So yeah, so that's important to me. But yeah, he will be back. Sure one, there will be opportunities for Midas. Kim Huat also does his share of political commentary, I feel, when the need warrants it. He's easy to use as a foil. But yeah, Midas is still around.
I mean, speaking about Kim Huat, I mean, Kim Huat got really, really upset with the Criminal Minds Beyond Borders episode on Singapore.
That was fun.
And produced, I think, a two-part series criticizing every little aspect of the episode, and I think that went viral.
That was very fun, very popular. I think people connected with that in a huge way because people were tired of Hollywood's portrayal of Asia, of Singapore. I think they picked the wrong country to do it. I mean, you suspend disbelief when you watch a show. I mean, what kind of agency can fly people around all over the world in a giant C-130. I mean, that, you have to suspend disbelief, right? But some of the stuff was just pretty much out there. And they picked the wrong country to show, like, injustice. You know, they wanted to paint this idea that this very disciplined and locked down country like Singapore would somehow treat a criminal case without care. I think everyone who lives here will tell you, no, that's not us. It can be a whole other bunch of countries. We will not name them, but when it comes to doing things by the book and doing it right, I think as far as our justice system is concerned, generally speaking, we don't mess around. And that was already the big mistake, right? Fundamentally, you chose the wrong country. I think it would have been better if they showed us cooperating and helping them make it happen rather than showing us as a bunch of, you know, people who don't care about the truth, and then we would just convict somebody. And then, of course, all the other tropes that they were peddling, the Ching Chong thing.
And the abundance of lanterns.
Oh my God. They recycled that set, apparently, from another episode about Chinatown. I later found out. Hence the lanterns. You know, you have to save money, so you got to reuse some parts of your budget, your set. But yeah, apparently the lanterns were found in another episode. So suddenly we're very lantern, as Kim Huat calls it. But yeah, that was a lot of fun to do. And that hit the chord in a big way. These things have a way of kind of going viral, even globally as well. They really took off.
Do you think that the Kim Huat character is supposed to just merely express the everyday man's frustrations or thoughts about issues or policies? Or is it just a stock character to just talk about certain things that you wish to talk more about?
No, I don't think Kim Huat is like a sort of a heavy man or anything or something that I'm using. He's a character that I enjoy playing. And when appropriate, I would speak through his voice. His primary duty is to make you laugh, really. Everything else is secondary, right? If it's not funny, it doesn't fly. So it's not meant to be any kind of agenda-driven, you know, character, I think. He's just a fun character to play with, right? And if you start kind of over-analyzing him, then it's not fun anymore. He has to be fun. I've used him for kind of stupid-ass things. Sometimes I have him dance. For nothing. Recently, I started doing like the glitch thing. He's just fun to experiment with. But he is somewhat of an everyman. Yeah. Angry when he needs to be. Sometimes I think he's an anger translator for many of us. You know, says certain things that in polite society, maybe we don't want to say it out loud, but inside we're kind of going, yeah, I want to say that. I wanted to say that, but it's not nice to say it. But okay, Kim Huat just said it. So maybe that's why he connects in that way. But at the heart of it, he's still, you know, very kind. He's got a heart of gold, I think. You know, he's not a perfect person, but his intentions are good.
I mean, he manages to be Singapore's number one fan in almost everything.
He is, right? And I came up with that out of a moment, like it was very random, but he is, you see, a reflection of, if you want to psychoanalyze him, he's a reflection of our Singaporean need to be number one at anything that we do, be it our exams, be it work, right? We have this, we're always trying to be the best, and for better or for worse, that is our nature, right? We call it kiasu, we call it kiasi, but Singapore is always obsessed with results, right? So it seems to me that it's not unheard of for Kim Huat to be a number one fan of whatever he's interested in at that point in time. There's no space. There's no time for number two here. You know, if you want to like something, you must be number one at it. You must really, really go into everything that you like. So I enjoy saying it's such a catchphrase now. I have people coming up to me and saying that to me all the time. Number one. You know, fill in the blank fan. But yeah. Maybe internally, I was already thinking about that when I came up with it, but it was totally random and it stuck.
It seems to me that a lot of things that you produce seem to be quite random things that just seem to stuck or seem to work, and then you just take it and go.
Yes, because I'm a very random person. I spend a lot of time thinking of nonsense. So it's like that. From my school days, I think the sense of humor that came from just hanging out with my classmates and that kind of randomness is still there. I think many of us lose that ability to look at things in this random way. I think many of us get very serious with life, right? And then we start. But I never lost it. So, and in fact, it got worse as I got older. And then hanging out with people like Miyagi just makes it worse, because the two of us are just as bad. We feed off each other's randomness. Mark Nair as well. And it's fun, because all the time, you know, you're making associations between things that happen. Even the most mundane things can trigger an association. It's a game for me. And it's necessary when you are trying to come up with things, trying to teach yourself to see things from multiple angles and to find some humor in it. And nowadays we've gotten so, you know, we've honed our craft so much that we can see it almost immediately, and it's fun. But yeah, the randomness is like that. It's part of the way I'm wired, I think. Some of the randomness that comes to my mind cannot even be articulated. I can't even some of the jokes that I come with is pretty dark. So for those, I share it privately with very close friends. But I continue to exercise that muscle, because if you hold back, then you kind of limit yourself. So yeah. But there are, some of it is improv. A lot of it is actually, we are very disciplined about our writing. humor is important. You know, writing is very important for such a craft. You have to spend time polishing. You have the idea, but you can't just. Sometimes it works better if you sit down and write it, just like a poem, an essay about history. A comedy script has to be written tight too. So we work it. We will have a random thought and then we run with it, but then it's usually massaged and written very tightly. Any comedian who does this for a living will tell you this. Yeah. Timing also needs to be practiced. So all this stuff has, there's a lot of work behind it. But yes, the randomness is pretty much my nature, yeah.
Do you think that it's become harder to avoid causing offense while creating humor?
Oh, yes. Yes, yes, yes. It's a lot harder now. I think the tolerance has gone down a lot. For good, for bad. I think you need to understand the mores of the society, right? You need to understand, you need to read the room, right? And you need to move with the times, right? Otherwise, you just become a cranky old man and say, how come you guys are so sensitive? Well, things change, right? People have different expectations. So one of the things that keep me grounded are my children. You know, my children will be the first to tell me if something is offensive to them. I don't have to agree with them, but it's interesting to kind of use them as a sounding board and say, hey, what do you think of this? And it keeps you aware of what is acceptable society in society. And then you decide whether you want to push against that, right? You have to know. You cannot just not know. You have to, whether you accept it or whether you want to, you know, adjust accordingly to that, you have to know, right? You have to be aware of it. Otherwise, you quickly become, the humor doesn't become relevant. And relevance is very important, I think, for something to work. Right. That's why if you read some of the cartoons shared by boomers, for want of a better word, sometimes you read it and like, oh man, that's such a boomer joke. You know, you don't want to be like that. You want to be able to kind of understand what is this current social climate. The Japanese call it kuki, I think. Reading the atmosphere, like basically reading the room. And you must always do this because part of humor is relevance, you know, understanding what is, making fun of things which are current, making fun of things which are relatable. And if you are not relatable, you're not understanding what is acceptable and what's not nowadays, you can't craft something that will work. But you have to know, then you can push, or you choose not to push, or how far you can push. All these things constantly in your mind. Yeah, I'm psychoanalyzing my own humor. Imagine that.
Speaking about audience demographic, what's your audience usually like for the various content that you produce?
I don't really keep track. That's the funny thing. Everyone keeps asking me about it, and I know I should go and like do some demographic research. But my understanding of it is that I do have a sizable number of people in the 30 to 60 age group. So grown-ups, right? 40 to 60 especially, because these are people who understand what I'm talking about. But I also have young people following me, so... And TikTok is a space where I'm hanging out in now. It's primarily young people, millennials and below. Why do I do that? Because I force myself to jump into that space so that I can understand what's going on. Right? Otherwise, I can hang out on Facebook all the time because that's where my crowd is now. Huh? Twitter is a different crowd. Singaporeans don't respond to, they read Twitter, they don't reply much. I realize they don't engage, but they're reading it. So there are like 400,000 people following me. It's not like the States where you have a lot of engagement going on, right? Whereas in Singapore, people can be more passive about Twitter, but they're there. But Facebook is my crowd, main crowd. I could stick with that and just carry on with that, but I'm not comfortable just hanging out. I feel that you should always build new audiences because if you have stories to tell and you have jokes to tell, you don't want to just limit yourself to one demographic. I think you should try to challenge yourself to reach more people. So it's very interesting. You know, I have a crowd who've known me since like your age, followed my stuff from very early on. And then there's another crowd that's actually known me since I was Kim Huat, right? And then it's each generation of fans have had different touch points coming into my content. I think that's fun. Recently, someone told me, I think it was a Grab driver, so, you are that guy from TikTok. Wow. Huh? What? So that's very cool. So it informs me that I am, you know, reaching a different group in a different place. And I'm happy to do that because I could have stuck with my blog, mrbrown.com, and then not move out of there forever. It's very easy and tempting to do that. But why? Why hang on to that? I mean, it's still there. You know, it's still going to be where I post content, but you have to go where the audience is and you must be willing to try. When I went into TikTok, nobody was watching my videos. But that's always the case. If you start caring about these things like demographics and number of likes and people, you're wasting time. Because I don't really care at this point in time. I already have enough people following me in enough places that I've never cared about it. I've always cared about entertaining people, telling stories, engaging with my following, because I think that's where the fun is. It doesn't matter if you don't get a million people following you, but you must continue to tell quality stories, make quality content, be it podcasts, you know, sketch comedy, videos, or even writing, which I've not done lately and a lot of, and I should. So it's all this, and tweets, right? One-liners. It's all, these things are fun to me. I think it's like a huge playground for me. And it keeps growing and it's a lot of fun to you know. And I'm happy to be the newbie in TikTok. You know, I think currently it's 25,000 fans. But when I started, there was nobody. But, you know, then you got to win them over. But it doesn't matter. Even if it remains at 25,000, I'm okay. It's the same with my podcast right now. My current podcast that I'm doing is not humor. It started out, the Mr. Brown Show was a humor thing. The latest incarnation of the podcast is just me talking, you know, chatting with my fans. Last year, it was me chatting with my late mother. And then now it's me talking about my thoughts. And it's not a huge following. I mean, it's a fraction of what I get if I posted a video about Kim Hwan. Okay. But I'm fine. I'm so happy with the couple hundred people who tune in every day to listen to me talk for 5 to 10 minutes. And actually, I'm very fond of that audience because they have taken the trouble to tune in every single day. And it's very intimate. So actually, that's my favorite thing to do, funnily enough. It's almost the Mr. Brown Show right now in its current incarnation is very close to my blogging days, but it's audio. I'm not writing my thoughts. I am just speaking it. I think that's fun too. But yeah, that's me. No, that's a passion project. There's no money in it. In fact, there's no money in a lot of things I do. But that podcast is fun to do. And occasionally I chat with friends. I've stopped doing the sketch comedy stuff there because I think there's enough, you know, space in my video work to do that, to explore that. But the podcast is my personal space. If you want to learn about what I think about the serious version of me, you know, not Kim Huat, not Midas, just Brown, then the podcast is where I share more openly. Yeah, I enjoy that. So the demographic is always, growing, and it's a lot of fun to try to, you know, share with more and more people. Yeah. I've been at this for like more than 20 years now. Got 20 years. Got 1997 to now. Yeah, I intend to keep doing it because it's fun.
You've spoken about how you find inspiration to create your comedy content and all that. You've also been a passionate advocate for those with special needs, and your daughter Faith is autistic. How has being a parent to Faith influenced your work and outlook in life?
I wouldn't use the word advocate. I'm just a guy who happens to have a special needs daughter. The issues I raise, I don't have. Let's put it this way. I don't have time to champion any causes. The only person I want to champion is my daughter. I want to make a better life for her. And I'm also aware that she's my responsibility, my wife and mine and my children's responsibility. At the same time, I want people to be aware that there are people with special needs in your midst. And I think it's improved. But when we first started, we were just as clueless as everybody else. It was new to us too. So I share, you know, about her life and about our journey, the same as if I had to share about my two other non-autistic children. So I like to avoid this whole, you know, championing thing because it's not my thing. I don't see it as my role. Other people may be better suited for this, but I'm happy to share my own journey. And it's only mine because other people have different journeys, right? Every family that has a special needs person in their family will have a different story to tell. Some of the stuff is similar, but I don't pretend to be able to represent anybody. But yes, if I see something I feel needs to change, I will say it because it's very, you know, it impacts my family in a direct way, and I would like to highlight it. Right, but things have improved from the very beginning. Awareness has gone up, but we're also now my other concern is mental health. Right. And I had a podcast about this a few days ago, and it's concerning to me. It's not just special needs, but young people with significant mental health challenges that are not being dealt with appropriately or in a timely fashion. So that one is important to me as well. Yeah. Again, not a champion of anything. I'm just a concerned parent. It's worrying. Yeah. And I will say it. I'll bring it up if I have to.
Now, as the block father of Singapore, you've witnessed the rise and fall of numerous tech trends, platforms. You've tried out podcasts, YouTube videos, Twitter, TikTok. So in a way, you are one of those pioneer influencers of Singapore, even before the term became common. So what would you consider to be some of the biggest changes you've observed from the time that you started to now?
I'm just a sucker for trying stuff, lah. It's just my nature. I mean, you know, you have YouTube at the beginning, and then you have Facebook later, and then the two of them are fighting now. Even that's changing, right? I mean, people are no longer using even central platforms like this anymore. It's gone decentralized. A lot of my content is shared on WhatsApp, for example, and other messaging platforms. It's gone viral even faster than Facebook, frankly. And it's fun, you know, to try different things and fail. But at the heart of it is still about people, right? You, it's just people out there, they're not netizens, as our mainstream media likes to call us. We are all people, and people want to hear stories, want to share their own thoughts and views. So all these things come and go, right? If you make your living, or if you want to make your stand on one particular platform, I have more power to you, but I don't care about these things. To me, these things will change. Tomorrow, this platform will be gone. So what do you do? You know, and I've survived all these years of changes simply because I don't care about these places. Because yes, you do care. You need to understand the platform. You need to understand how it works. You need to understand how people interact in and engage in that place. But at the end, you still have to have good content. You still have to have a compelling story to tell, right? And you need, or if you, in my case, you still need to be funny, right? Otherwise, you are locked into some technology or another, right? Technology is a wonderful enabler. It's just wonderful. I mean, I'm doing things that I had to go and jump through hoops in the past to do. To record a podcast, for example, when I was starting out, I had a mixer, I had a microphone, I had to find a place to host my files. Now I'm recording this podcast with you on Zoom. If you wanted a video version of this file, it's done. You don't even need to try very hard. I'm recording this with a microphone that connects into my iPad Pro, which I'm using to talk to you, that has center stage. You see, I'm moving left and right, and it's panning with me. So if you're listening to the audio version of this podcast, you know, you can't see it, but it's fun. The technology is amazing, isn't it? And people are streaming on Twitch and doing all these things, which I haven't even touched. I haven't done game streaming yet. I might. But it's all this stuff is amazing. The technology is becoming so, making it so accessible for anybody to share their creativity, be it humor, be it music, yeah? All of that stuff. And I think it's a very powerful enabler, but we mustn't lean on it and treat it as a crutch. Just because you have the fanciest equipment doesn't mean, or the best platform, or whatever, it's going to necessarily translate into anything meaningful, right? Same with podcasting. I mean, it's so easy to do it now. It used to be harder. But do you have anything interesting to say? Right. And does it even matter? Maybe you just want to reach those 10 people who listen to your show every day. One of them is your grandmother. That's cool too. But it's wonderful now. And I try my best to equip my children with the stuff that they need. I don't push it on them. But if they are doing something and I'm like, oh, you need a microphone? Okay, I'll set it up for you. Here it is. You need some, you're shooting a music video for your song? Yeah, here's a, you know, here's some lights. I'll set it up for you. And go and figure it out yourself. Right. I don't want to kind of make a big deal about the equipment, but actually my children are pretty equipped. They figure out what's the appropriate level of technology they want to use. But it's amazing that they are now able to do all the things that, you know, they're doing now I could not do in the past. So in that regard, technology and platforms and all that is wonderful. But you still, at the heart of it, need to be creative. Otherwise, then it's just technology, frankly. But yeah, embrace the technology, figure out what works for you and what works for the stuff, the stories you want to tell, the stuff that you want to do creatively. It's amazing, you know.
One of the things I wanted to ask you was that, you know, during a time where viral memes and influencers have a very short shelf life, Mr. Brown has survived 24 years. So what would you say is your secret to remaining fresh and relevant?
There's no secret. You're only as good as your last post. Yeah? If you stop, then you stop. But you can't live off your old stuff. I mean, it's meaningless to me to tell, for example, somebody following me recently, did you hear about the Bar Chomit podcast? Right? And it's always been my philosophy that you're only as good as your last joke or your last piece of content. I think, you know, it's like breathing. Comedy is like breathing. You constantly have to come up with something else. And you need to give yourself breaks too and understand that there's no way that you can churn out content the way that the society expects you to. So I'm not as prolific as some of these other people who are creating. I don't know how they do it because I will burn out. But I also feel that you should keep trying, you know. And because I've got so much randomness in me, it never ends. And I'm constantly thinking of rubbish and I have a need to share that. So maybe that's why it works, because I have this insatiable appetite for coming out of rubbish and nonsense and an even bigger appetite for sharing it. But yeah, you need to constantly be willing to push yourself and push boundaries, not just content and all that, but also put out quality stuff with quality equipment. So yes, content, you know, gear doesn't matter. They always tell you this, but gear does matter to some degree because your needs change. And so that's why I spend a lot of money on my equipment. I'm also a gearhead. But like, you know, at the end, it's still the need to keep telling stories and not give up doing it. That must drive you. If you're looking for numbers, you're looking for likes, that's not going to mean anything. You're going to burn yourself out caring about these things, right? I care about my content, my quality, the stuff that I put out. And I just like to make you laugh. And the class clown cannot stop making people laugh. So that's what I've been doing for 24 years. Actually longer than that. If you count the time I was in classroom, sitting at the back with Brian Chua. But yeah, that's what drives me. And also because I don't care about how big or small my audience is. Right. I think if you do the quality stuff, people eventually will come. Yeah. So just have fun. And people can tell if you're trying too hard. I think you must enjoy it. Otherwise, you can't continue doing this for so many years. I'm doing it for a living now, which is ridiculous. You know, I tell my children, don't be like me. But I enjoy that independence. Right? I'm not beholden to any mainstream media. I don't belong to a TV station, radio station, newspaper. I've been doing this by myself, with my own audience, and I've built that audience up over the years. And I enjoy that freedom of being able to do what I do. Yeah. That in itself is the satisfaction. And that's what keeps me doing what I do.
I guess finally, would Singapore's number one Mr. Brown fan like to say a few words?
Oh dear. You give me a minute. Let me go and get him.
Hello. This is Kim Huat, Singapore number one podcast fan. Thank you for inviting me. Actually, you should have invited me earlier. You go and talk to the Mr. Brown. It's a very serious one. So boring, yeah. Yeah. Hello, Mr. Dev. Your background very nice. You like the Lord of the Rings. You got to go to New Zealand or not?
Not yet. Hoping to go.
Yeah. I went to see before. Very exciting. Yeah, yeah. So you're recording this podcast for the History Channel?
Yeah, for the History Yogi podcast.
Very popular. You got more followers than Mr. Brown on the TikTok.
Oh, okay.
And you don't even shake your backside or wear the bikini. It's amazing. I admire your following. Yeah. Not to say you should wear the bikini and dance, the sexy dance. Don't need to start. The history alone is already very interesting.
So I wanted to ask you, why do you think history is important for Singaporeans to understand?
Because it's must understand the history, then you know what is the tomorrow. Ma. People are very stupid one. You know, you sometimes they say certain things, they don't understand the history. Then they anyhowly say. For example, I give you an example. Recently, I got see online, some people copy Kabul say that America coming to Singapore to visit us. Right, their vice president called Kamala. Then they angry. They say, this America come to Singapore, want to make us gang up against the China. It's like the opium wars. I read already. I want to score them. You understand what is opium war or not? It's a very different time. They come here, is try to cho-cho you to support them. Yes. But Singapore government will not do this type of thing. We like both sides. But does not mean we don't call them come, right? America come here, petrol, bring their aircraft carrier and the shit. It's not a bad thing. It's actually a good thing for our security. If you read the history, it's important to have America in our region. But all these people don't know what they tau hong, eat and smell already. Then suddenly think, wow, they are just bullying our China. Who's our China? China is your relative. You are Singapore, leh. You why so care whether it's China or is it America? You must understand our position in the region. It's history. If you understand the history, then you will not say this type of stupid thing. But China is also a trading partner. It's important to our region. But does not mean they are your BFF. America also not your BFF, right? You have to have perspective of the history. One want to pro-China. Someone is a pro-America. There's no pro. The only one pro you pro is pro-Singapore. Understand? So the history very important. Don't understand the history, then you anyhow shoot the mouth. The only history then you start talking is other country propaganda history. So if you don't understand your own country history and the world history, then you will start to be influenced by other country, other superpower. And Singaporean cannot afford to be influenced like that. We must open mind. How can you go and tell America to come? Come! We are friends, lie. This whole region, very important to have them come around. Balance, ma. You know, balance of power, ma. See, Kim Hwa read history book one. I highly recommend you read the Winston Choo history book, the biography I got by. Good book. Read about his time as a general of our soldiers. He's the OG general, original general. Understand our place in the world, because we only tiny island. Tomorrow can be gone. How can they know history? Like that. Not say I'm a professor or what. I never studied a master. But I like to read. I like to watch the history documentary also. Yeah. Recently, the aircraft carrier, Queen Elizabeth. Then a lot of people also, why they come? British Empire, blah, blah, blah. Hey, they also must come. It's good, but freedom of passage. They got their own agenda. But they are not colonized already. They are not our colony. We are not their colony. You talk so much, what? But they should come also. Everybody come. South China Sea is very fun.
Thank you so much, Kim Huat, for promoting the importance of history to Singaporeans.
Bro, I love history. We should start a history channel. Deaf History Channel on the StarHub. Then you can rescue them. Until nobody was ready. But yeah, thank you for having me on your show. And thank you for having Mr. Brown on your show.
Okay, thank you so much, Kim Huat. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye. How to off this stupid thing. This Zoom very complicated. Oh yeah.